The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are a couple of our resident certified financial planners, Cole Hammack and Cameron Utley. Today we're talking about open enrollment, and that's kind of your language. Let's explain to people what that means. And it obviously refers to insurance, but let's talk about what it means for the every person first.
Yeah, I'd say in the digital age, you're probably just getting an email from HR around this time of the year. Might go to junk, you might, you know, forget about it, but there's usually an attachment. If you work for an old style employer, maybe you still get the big packet on your desk when you walk out or mailed to you. And open enrollment is just the one time of the year where you get to review all of your company benefits. You get to see what the one thing that we always point out is look for the benefits that are maybe new for this year, but it usually about a 2 to 4 week window that you get to elect your benefits, and once you've elected them, you usually can't change them throughout the year. So it's a really important time to just kind of spot check, kick the tires, make sure you're choosing the right benefits.
So are you saying that for my health insurance through my employer, if I have optical or if I have dental but no optical and all of a sudden I feel like I need optical, I can change that this time of the year? I can add it if it's offered?
Yeah, that's generally speaking. I say this time of year, that's just because most corporations usually late fall are going through open enrollment at this time. Some might be in the summer, spring, just whenever. But again, kind of generalities. Yeah, when open enrollment pops up, every company is going to be different. To Cameron's point, you'll get that notification. Then you have the opportunity to change for the upcoming year, which generally is calendar year.
There are a few exceptions as far as when you can change. Like I said earlier, you usually only get one shot every year. Mm-hmm. Now there's special open enrollment for what they call change of life scenarios. I'm probably not going to name them all, but the big ones are birth, death, marriage, divorce, and is there another one?
If there's a change of employment in the household. Change job, then you can generally change benefits.
And the last one I think of is if, you think of children on health insurance when they turn 26, typically they can't be on the parents' health insurance. That would also be another special open enrollment for the child.
Oh, I never even thought about that one.
There's a lot.
That's crazy. Okay, I want to talk about the different health insurance plan options. Let's just run through a few of those and talk about their differences without getting too detailed.
Yeah, so let's get into the two main ones that people are going to be aware of. There's your HMOs, so that's your health maintenance organization. And I had to look that one up. And then your PPOs would be your preferred provider organization. So the difference primarily is how flexible are the two plans. I think we mostly leave it at the, just talking about the flexibility aspect. So your HMOs, generally, they're going to be more restrictive. So the primary care physician acts as a gatekeeper, essentially. So you need to go through them to work with a specialist versus a PPO. You can work directly with the specialist without having to go through that gatekeeper.
And how do you figure that out? Just by contacting your insurance company?
So generally speaking, as you're going through open enrollment, that's going to be listed directly within the health insurance options that you can elect.
Okay.
So often there's going to be an HMO plan, a PPO plan. I think I've been seeing fewer and fewer HMO plans, which I think is a step in the right direction. Sometimes there might just be two PPO plans of varying degrees of coverage. And then another plan would be a high deductible health insurance plan. So that's a great one that creates a lot of flexibility. And I can let Cameron talk about that one if that's a good time to.
Yeah, let's do that because I've actually never heard of that one.
Yes, a high deductible plan. I usually like to compare that with the PPO plan. Those are the two most common you'll see if you have an employer with a big enough set of options where you get to choose. Some employers, they basically saying, here's the one option you get for our plan. Because you might not know this, but health insurance is expensive, no matter who's paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the high deductible plan is kind of what it sounds like. The first dollars you put out, also known as the deductible. So if you go to the doctor, they bill you $1,000, you have a $4,000 deductible. Well, that first $4,000, so that whole bill that you got at the doctor that day, you have to pay out of your own pocket. But once you hit the deductible for the year, then there's usually what's called a co-insurance piece to it, up to an annual limit. So kind of a confusing way. I think it's kind of purposeful that way. But it might say after you hit your deductible, you only have to pay 10 or 20% of whatever's billed up to a certain limit. So it's usually a really good plan for people who either don't go to the doctor very much, those who want health insurance, or for those who are just generally very healthy and don't need a lot of expensive medical treatment or don't go to see a lot of specialists.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens the door to a plan that we like to talk a lot about on this show, the health savings account, or an HSA. So an HDHP, or the high deductible health plan, be the full name for that. That's a requirement for an HSA.
You have to have both in place. You have to have one in place to have the other.
Yeah, so you have to have the high deductible health plan to qualify for an HSA.
And is that always through an employer, or can you get that through an insurance agent or a broker?
Great question. Yeah, that can be from anybody. So as long as it qualifies, so the deductible has to be above a certain limit, and the max out-of-pocket has to be below a certain limit. So those are reported on the IRS tables. You can Google that. I don't know the specific numbers mm-hmm. offhand, but as long as it hits those qualifiers, whether it's from the employer or online or private policy, then you qualify for an HSA.
We're not insurance agents, but is that my first instinct is to ask you, is the decision to go that direction contingent on your cash flow?
So that's part of it, definitely. And I think the other part's the expectations, what Cameron was getting at. So as you're looking into the next year, if you're generally a healthy individual, considering a higher deductible plan, because the trade-off is as you increase the deductibles, the premiums are generally lower too. So the benefit for that is, hey, if we aren't expecting to go to the doctor, we are healthy, we don't really have any specialists, going that high deductible plan reduces the premiums, gives you access to an HSA, just generally more flexible for the healthy people. But if you're less healthy, then I don't think it may not matter as much to go that HSA route despite the lower premiums, because you may be paying more out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a lot more than just cash flow, and it's a lot really setting expectations for what's coming that next year.
Mm-hmm. I think you contrast that with the PPO plan. Again, we're not saying one's really good for just healthy people, one's really good for people who aren't healthy. But when it comes to the cost, you just need to weigh and sort of do the math on, you know, the PPO plan. It's going to be lower out of pocket typically, mm-hmm. or you might have a lower deductible. Instead of $4,000, might be $400. And then every dollar above that, that's why you hear a lot of the word copay come in. You might only pay $50 copay every time you go see the doctor. Mm-hmm. But the premiums on that, the cost point, are generally 2, 3, 4 times, sometimes higher than that on a multiple per month. So it can be much more expensive than a high deductible plan. So you really just need to figure out, well, one, most importantly, does either plan cover the doctors I use? That's
a great point.
You want to make sure that you can, you know, you're paying for something you can actually utilize. Otherwise, what are you doing? And then two, Wayne, what are your medical needs? And just fitting in, I think to an extent, cash flow, can you afford, if you have lower out-of-pocket costs, can you afford to, you know, stomach that high
right.
bill when you go to the doctor with the high deductible plan?
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. My notes are based off of some research I did, and in the notes, they talk about 401k contributions. And my brain is in insurance mode right now. So why in the world how's a 401k related to open enrollment?
Yeah, so open enrollment, historically, it's been a lot more insurance focused. So setting up the life insurance or disability insurance or health insurance through work. But they do basically reiterate all of the aspects that you have available with the employer. So that they'll reiterate, here's the 401k you have access to, matching contributions, or, hey, you can now make contributions on a Roth basis to your 401k, one of those new things that Cameron was referencing, or deferred compensation plans. So they're just running through, hey, here's all of your benefits working for us. So that's a good time to really revisit your numbers too, because that's if you're not getting a prompt otherwise or not otherwise thinking about it, what am I contributing to my 401k? Am I getting a raise, or did I get a raise this year? Did it make sense to bump that up another percent or two getting into 2025? That's not to say you need to do that during open enrollment. So most of those plans are flexible throughout the year, but it's usually a good prompt to actually start thinking about that for the coming year.
Good to know. What's the max on a 401k contribution?
So this year, it depends on age, but for anyone under 50, it's $23,000. And then if you're over 50, it's $30,500. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yep. Awesome. How can people make sure they're getting the most from their employer's match? Is there, you know, a best practice for that?
There's a, again, if your open enrollment packet wasn't thick enough, there's another ancillary document called your summary plan description with your 401k, another beautiful 80-page read for the weekend on the beach. But
and I promise, if you ask the employer benefits person, you're probably the only person that's done it.
Yep.
No one's asking for this document.
Absolutely. But you, in that document, it would say, you know, how you can contribute to your 401k, and then how your employer treats matches, profit sharing, any other miscellaneous types of contributions, and how those go into your account.
And it's important to know, as you're deciding how to make the increase, whether, you know, it's 10% or 22%, how to do the math with regard to the rest of your pay, right?
Yeah, so I will say this. I think it's becoming more and more popular. I don't know why. Maybe people just are tired of doing the math on it, but is on your 401k site. We think of it sometimes in terms of percentage, but I think it's becoming more popular now on a lot of 401k sites. You can designate dollar amounts to be contributed. So if you're tired of figuring out what's 5% of my pay, not a hard calculator equation, but they give you the option now to say, okay, maybe I want to do, if I want to make sure I hit that 23,000 this year, again, I'm not very good with math, but if you could do 23,000 divided by how many times you paid a year, and contribute that dollar amount, $500-$600 a pay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So flexible spending accounts, those are FSAs versus health savings accounts, HSAs. What's the difference between those, and how does somebody figure out which one is better for them?
The key difference is an FSA, that flex spending account, is it's a use it or lose it plan. Mm-hmm. So that's the important distinction really with the S's and the two. So it's an FSA, a flex spending account, versus an HSA, health savings account. So again, the FSAs, use it or lose it. Generally, the contribution limits are a little bit lower than an HSA, but you select during open enrollment a predetermined amount that we want to fund this account for expected medical expenses in the coming year. And if we don't use it, it either all goes away. Sometimes they have a carry forward $500, $600 into the upcoming year, but anything over that can just go back to the employer. HSAs, being a savings account, that's your money. So you can use that however you deem fit, whenever you deem fit. So
it's your money to begin with.
Yeah, well, that's...
my brain is sitting
here...
The
IRS would disagree.
Yeah, but my brain is sitting here saying, who would ever choose an FSA over an HSA?
Yeah.
If it goes away, when it would ever make sense to choose that?
Well, in some cases, your only option is an FSA. And Cole brought up earlier.
Tricky.
When Cole brought up earlier the high deductible plan, you technically have the option of doing the HSA or the FSA. I've never met anyone who has picked the FSA because you have to spend whatever you put into it. But if you're in the PPO plan, you don't have an HSA available, so you only have the FSA. So it could make sense if you know how much roughly you're going to spend per year on medical expenses to set some aside. You get the tax deduction for it, and it's going to be earmarked already for health expenses. You might as well do it efficiently.
Yeah. Is there a percentage that I would shoot just under it. If I was able to deduce I spent X amount in the previous year, I would shoot for like 20% under.
so you could, but there's a great website. I don't know if I'm allowed to plug a website, but it's fsastore.com, and we'll cut that if I'm not allowed to say it. But
we have a bleep button, I think.
Yeah, that's perfect. but it's basically an Amazon for FSA and HSA eligible products. And Amazon's great at that now, too, where you can use that FSA card or HSA card to pay for those on a pre-tax basis or through that card. So it's a lot easier now than I think it used to be if there is access. You just have to remember to actually use it.
So are these accounts earning interest?
So the FSA does not. So that's basically just a cash account. The HSA can. So generally speaking, when you make your contributions, they're just sitting there as cash, maybe earning a little bit of interest depending on the platform that they're on. But if you're not actively using those HSA funds to pay for current medical expenses, you can set that up to be invested. So you can actually earn money for future medical expenses because we're always going to have them.
What happens if you never use it?
If you never use it, pass away, then you can actually set a beneficiary for it.
And
so
then
it stays as an HSA.
Okay,
so
that was my question.
They still have to use it for medical-related expenses, but it's a pretty good bucket
to
inherit.
That's a pretty cool legacy to leave somebody. Yeah. Because that's generally, as you're evolving as an adult, that is generally not on the radar. You know, you never think it's going to happen to you, whatever version of that is. And it's always the last on the list. It's probably one of the most neglected part of a financial plan, I would imagine, is to be attentive to this. Yeah. At least in my world, it is. So life and disability insurance is next. Do you need more life or disability? Beyond, and if you're lucky enough that your employer offers that, which one is more relevant?
Maybe it's philosophical, but I think we all need more life, Tracy. Anyways, Cameron, let's talk.
All right, in all seriousness, I guess it could be a debate about this, but I'm more of a firm believer that disability insurance is more important than life insurance. I know we've covered that in many shows, but essentially, if you pass away, then there's a death benefit that's paid out to your family or whoever you have listed on that account. I think if that happens, then, you know, it's paid out, it's done, call it a day. Whereas disability insurance, it's if you become disabled, not only are you essentially out of a job, but you have care on the back end, and so you've eliminated your biggest source of wealth building, which is your income, and then now you have this extra expense on the table for the family. And so I think, you know, that, and, you know, for a lot of disabilities, it could be, you know, 40, 50, 60 years if you become disabled in your earlier part of your life, and that can be quite the strain on the family. So I think having some disability coverage in place, knowing what, I think Cole might get into this in a minute, or you might bring it up, Tracy, is knowing what your disability benefit specifies. Knowing what you're going to get paid for and for how long, and, you know, what kind of medical care you need to stay qualified as disabled is important to know when you're electing this coverage.
And there's short-term disability and long-term disability. Yep. Is there a benchmark time frame for each of those? So, you know, you get short-term disability for a max of 5 years, for instance.
Usually it's either 90 to 180 days.
So plan three to six months.
Yes, yeah, plan 3 to 6 months on short-term, and then thereafter transitions to that long-term disability.
And I would think it's important to know every employer is different. Some employers don't have short-term disability. Mm-hmm. They might just say...
Some just have short-term disability.
Right. And some may say just use your sick days for short-term. They give you enough sick days to where
it gets you up, or a vacation
that gets you up to that long-term disability window of 90 or 180 days.
Long-term disability, does that mean until you're no longer alive, or is it just, again, is there a time stipulation?
It used to. There used to be some excellent disability policies where they would pay out for your lifetime, but unfortunately they don't make those anymore. Things have changed. So current policies, employer ones, will generally pay to either age 65 or your Social Security full retirement age. So it could go as late as 67, but generally not any later than that.
And then somebody would transition, if need be, to like what, Medicaid?
So at that point, 67 could be Medicaid, Medicare, depending on the financial situation, but you're officially retired. Mm-hmm. Then at that point, how they deem it. So Social Security would start in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to know all the little extras like dental, vision. Are those all really worth it versus paying out of pocket?
I think so.
Especially optical.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially vision. Dental's always funny because it's like, it's one of those where you feel like you're never getting enough coverage for some of the expenses, right? But if something comes up, you're probably going to wish you had it, and generally it's fairly inexpensive to have. So I think dental's worth it. Vision, though, definitely to your point, I mean, when a pair of glasses is $400, mm-hmm. but they're going to cut you a pretty good break on the insurance piece or cover lenses or whatever it is or a good bit of contacts, it's probably worth paying mm-hmm. that. But then you have to evaluate, does everyone in the household need it?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you go single, family, employee plus children or employee plus spouse, like Alyssa, it's just her getting the vision insurance because my eyes are good enough. She would argue otherwise.
But
I can see. I'm sorry, camera. But I can see. So like, there's no reason having vision insurance for me. I'm not going to see them even if I had it. So just figure out what's appropriate for your family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We talk a lot about tax implications in every aspect of our business here. And it's always a big conversation when it comes to these for somebody like us, like me, who's not a CFP. What in the world are the tax implications of benefit choices? How does that even play a role in your benefit choices?
Mm.
So pre-tax versus after-tax benefits mm-hmm. affecting your paycheck predominantly.
So most of these come out pre-tax. Like health insurance is the big one. So health insurance, fortunately, is a pre-tax deduction when you're employed. It is actually frustrating for self-employed people or people getting private insurance because, generally speaking, it's not deductible. So it's actually less valuable at the personal level than it is when working for an employer. So that's a big one. I think 401ks, as part of the benefit consideration, is oftentimes pre-tax. But many people can take advantage of Roth contributions. But the benefit ultimately from that pre-tax standpoint is you're reducing your taxable income on those contributions or those premiums or whatever it is. And that means if the premium's $200, it might only impact your paycheck by $180, something like that, just to throw out an example. So it's not going to be one-to-one on the pre-tax side versus Roth. If you're doing a $200 contribution, you're out $200. That's dollar for dollar.
Yeah, life insurance, disability insurance are can be a little tricky, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's an inverse relationship between tax now, tax later. So, example, with disability insurance, most employers use it as a pre-tax deduction on your pay stub. But the consequence of that is when you file for your benefit, if you file a claim, that benefit is then taxable to you. There are some instances and some employers where you can, whether it's an option they automatically give you or something you can request, is for them to make it an after-tax contribution, which then makes your benefit tax-free. Same thing, and then similar with life insurance. Most life insurance policies, when you're on your pay stub, are after tax, because when you get a death benefit, file a claim for that, there's no taxes on that life insurance payout. If they were to make a pre-tax, same thing, it's the inverse relationship, then they might charge you tax on that death benefit.
Paying taxes on life insurance. I can't wrap my brain around that. I never, actually never, as old as I am, I never realized that.
They're looking out for you.
I didn't realize that.
Try living in one of the, 10 states with an inheritance tax or something like that? So
and then income tax, high income tax states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, pick on Pennsylvania. I know Stephen loves Pennsylvania, but they have, I think, a 4% inheritance tax. So if you pass away in Pennsylvania, someone's living there, they inherit those funds, then they're paying 4%. As a tax just to receive those funds from the life insurance stem.
Time
That's
to move.
Above and beyond
only,
everything
only
else.
Thing we don't like about Pennsylvania.
Well, good. That in Penn State.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Uh-oh. Did I say? Sorry, Stephen.
It's a few weeks away still.
Yeah. All right. Spousal and dependent coverage. So when is it a good idea to have spouse and kids under your plan? Is there a best way to save money in that situation?
I think it strictly is. How do the plans compare? So if you're both working, is one plan going to be a little bit better than another? Or does one plan impose a fee if you're not, or if you're, if you have access to a health insurance plan, but you decide to go on to a different one? So some will do that. You got to be very careful. But if there's going to be a fee, generally it's better spouses be on their respective policies and then put the kids on whichever one's more cost effective or whichever one has the better actual details or coverage there. And then the other piece would be like, I hear dependent care spousal thing. I think life insurance too. You can often get life insurance on family, and that is very much a personal basis. Sometimes it's okay. You might not always need life insurance on your kids, but some people sleep better at night knowing that, hey, if something happens, maybe there's 10 grand, maybe there's 50 grand. And generally it's really cost-effective coverage too. So it's not the end of the world if you do select it.
We've done a couple of podcasts where we've had guest hosts from the marketplace, and we encourage you to listen to those programs because it sheds light on the fact that there are organizations out there that you can get policies through if, for instance, mm-hmm. you don't necessarily want to get your long-term care from your employer, or you want to price shop, right? So is it always cheaper to go through the employer? Again, we're not agents, but is it worth shopping those organizations like the ones we've recently talked to?
Yeah, I think it just you're not going to know unless you shop it out. I was looking at a document yesterday, and for the open enrollment for every health plan, it said that the employer, if you're a full-time employee, the employer is paying, which we don't often realize, but the employer is paying in that instance 75% of the healthcare premiums. Versus otherwise, if you go out and do it on your own, you're going to pay 100% of it. So just being aware of that, I would be shocked while you're working if it's going to come out cheaper, unless your employer plan is just exorbitantly priced. Mm-hmm. But it's not a bad exercise to go through it mm-hmm. if you're just wanting to see what's out there.
Yeah, I'd say that's often the case with health insurance, but something like life insurance, for example, that's one of those things where as an individual, especially someone healthy, it can be pretty easy to get priced out of workplace life insurance. The idea being that generally they have to make money. So they're creating those premiums in a way that inflates that for the healthy people because they don't want to lose money on the unhealthy people. And because they're doing it as a group, they have to lean more toward that unhealthy side. So if you're someone who is fairly healthy, usually in your 40s, 50s, that's when we start to see that start to shift. Considering looking at a personal policy versus that workplace policy can be a lot more cost effective in a lot of cases.
And I didn't know until we had Mike Gutierrez on the show from Health Markets Insurance Agency recently. You can look that one up, guys. I did not know that it ever made sense to have employer insurance and marketplace simultaneously, but apparently health insurance, apparently it's something that you can look into doing, and sometimes it makes sense. So
I'd maybe have to double check that one. I know that's the case if there you add maybe like a catastrophic rider to it, for example, but I don't know about double dipping on health insurance. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah. So reviewing and adjusting in that vein, reviewing and adjusting beneficiary designations, that's a pretty important part of your conversations with our
yes,
clients.
Yes, it is.
You probably have some good horror stories.
Emphatically, yes.
Ex-wife on the beneficiary style.
Yeah,
or,
oof. Yeah, there's, yeah. You see it all. But obviously you don't have to wait till open enrollment to make that change. You can do it at any time. But again, if that's the prompt you need to go back through, look at whatever plan you have, take it. Just check everything, comb through the website, check your beneficiaries. I've seen in so many cases where there's just no beneficiary listed even. You'd be married 10 plus years.
Wow.
You could say you submitted the beneficiary info, but if it's maybe a smaller employer, they might not have that on file. They might not have reported that or whatever the instance may be. So pay attention.
Yeah.
No one cares about your money more than you do.
The other piece of that, it's a small one, but there are times when your employer, for whatever reason, cheaper costs, it's bad service from the company, they might change providers. So you might think your benefits haven't changed, but your 401k mm-hmm. left company A. They took the 401k from company A to company B. And when it comes to beneficiaries, which I think is probably more important than anything else, those sometimes don't translate. Those don't transfer over one for one. So you just need to make sure you're not taking all of your benefits are granted, it might be the same lineup, but it might be different. You need to re-enroll in some benefits that you've had previously.
Great point.
Okay. There are two on my list that I'm intrigued by. The last two I want to talk about, income protection strategies. So is it worth getting extra income protection or critical illness insurance? I've never even heard of critical illness insurance before. Is that through an employer policy or is that
I'd say
pretty common?
A lot of employers more and more, right toward the tail end of your benefit packet, they're offering kind of three key, relatively newer benefits. So there's the critical illness, there's the accident, and then there's the hospital indemnity riders. I think those are the big three. So the idea really comes down to, is that actually relevant? Because a lot of people, they're going to look at those and maybe view that as some form of disability insurance. Mm-hmm. But that's almost how that reads, right? We're looking at income protection. Mm-hmm. These aren't necessarily income protection. So the idea is we're paying a premium for these very specific policies. And if we happen to have an event that's listed within that qualifying document, you're going to get a one-time payout to either cover all or a portion of the expenses associated with that event. So critical illness generally includes things like cancer, heart attack, end-stage renal failure, those major, major diseases. So if you have a family history of that, that could make a lot of sense. But if it's someone in their 20s, their 30s, maybe no family history, I would be hard-pressed to say go for that policy. But again, it's entirely on a case-by-case basis. The accident insurance, if you're accident-prone, or if you have kids maybe who are.
Missed
yeah,
that Trace, one.
Yep. there could be a payout there.
That's a big meep.
And then hospital indemnity, if you ended up in a hospital for whatever reason, there could be payouts based on the severity of that. Basically. So really just comes down to a personal basis. Generally speaking, because they're so restrictive, I'm not a huge fan, but obviously there's a place for all of them. And it really comes down to the individual.
It's sometimes, there's sometimes the enticement to just click the box because it's, I'm not going to say a dollar amount, but they're a fraction of what your health insurance costs.
Yes.
And I'm sure that I wish we had the associates in here, you know, working on their CFPs, but insurance 101, it's all about the law of probability. What's the chance? What are the chances I'm going to use this? And the reason it's so cheap is because filing a claim has to be, the terms have to be so specific versus health insurance is so expensive because everyone uses it. So just being aware of, yes, it's inexpensive for this coverage, but am I actually going to use it? You know, if you add up those premiums over 20 years and mm-hmm. you'll think about it, that's still a lot of money.
Right. If you're sports inclined, for instance, if you play a sport, even as an adult.
In a rec league.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It might behoove you to have an accident policy on the side. Yeah. That just supplements your health insurance, I assume. Okay. Running through, as we end the conversation, running through some do's and don'ts. Let's give some do's when it comes to open enrollment. What are some of the first things that come to your mind?
Do it. Open the email.
Just do it.
open the email. Look for what's new. I mean, usually it's within the first couple of pages, there might be something saying, here's what's changed. So always start there. See what's relevant for you.
Oh, that's so daunting. Just all of that language and all of those papers.
I know.
Just so daunting.
You have to do it.
We talked about this at least I've been on at least one episode with you on a previous podcast, but I know a topic we've talked about a lot is identity theft protection mm-hmm. or legal services. Mm. Those are things that are relatively new benefits that if gone unnoticed or you wouldn't open the email, you wouldn't have seen that, and you can get a lot of those services for a fraction of what you would pay retail for them. And mm-hmm. it's because your employer can offer them to however many hundreds or thousands of employees they have, and they can get a bigger discount on those premiums. And you can maybe get your estate plan done. You can make sure your data is protected, get encryption software in your computer, use services that you otherwise would have paid a lot more for, but if you pay attention to open enrollment, you can get through your employer.
And I have a follow-up to my last one, Tracy, since you griped about it being so daunting. if you're working with a professional, forward them the email and have them do it.
Are you like, looking at me?
I'm just, listen, like us, for example, we love to look at these documents because we understand people hate looking at these documents.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Not yeah, I know we might be crazy, but I said the beach read earlier. We don't mind having the summary plan descriptions or the open enrollment packets on the beach. It beats for us. It beats the beach reads that you get at the airport.
Oh my gosh, that's insane. Okay, any other dues? We've got so you're saying review your current benefits, mm-hmm. right? Look at your documents. What else can you think of?
Compare those to your spouse's benefits if you have a spouse. A lot of times it's just taking for granted. Oh, because my wife or my husband's with this employer, their insurance is better. Well, how often do you check to make sure it's still better? Mm-hmm. And usually, a lot of times we see if whoever has the health insurance, you might also choose the same. You know, you just go everything with them, and then you just neglect the other spouse's coverage. Mm-hmm. If you've changed employers, if things get more expensive, we've seen a big jump. I think the PPO plans, for example, not to throw them under the bus, but this year over last year, those premiums have skyrocketed more than we've seen previously, and more than the high deductible plans have risen in price. So just being aware and always, like I said, not to say the same saying again, but kick the tires every year, mm-hmm. compare those with all the options out there and make sure you're getting the best bang for your buck.
And I'd say if you had any major life changes in the current year, so I always think new house, spouse, kids, maybe a big promotion at work kind of thing, big change in household income, revisiting the life insurance and the disability insurance. Because you may quickly find as you add new debt or planning for college or we have this household lifestyle we need to provide now that what you had before is probably not going to cut it mm-hmm. anymore, especially, again, if you had just experienced a big raise, there may be restrictions mm-hmm. on your existing disability insurance that could create a huge, huge issue if you were to become disabled, whether accident, illness, anything. So you definitely don't want to neglect those crucial pieces.
Anything else? Plan. How about a couple of don'ts in addition to what you just said?
Don't not open the email.
Okay. Don't skip preventative care benefits. Don't, here's one that jumps out at me.
I would say don't assume that everything's the same as last year.
Yeah, that's another one. Yep. And don't ignore the updates.
Yep.
And don't forget to update your personal information.
A great one. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. This has been great. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.